The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Craig, Andy, Jimmy, JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
Oh, there we are. And recording in 3, 2, 1. Welcome to Footy Prime, everybody. It is Wonger. Just so you guys know, Sharms is cooking pies today. And this show today, BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. We are so happy to have on our MLS Thursday Friday show, Marcelo Balboa, former U.S. men's national team, all-time great, and now Spanish language analyst on MLS on Apple TV. Marcelo, welcome.
Thanks for having me. I see some it's exciting. Faces. It's kind of nice.
Well, yeah, you're here with...
We saw you at the World Cup draw as well, didn't we?
Yeah.
That was an interesting event. Yep. Craig Forrest, Jimmy Brennan, and Marcelo and I are going to talk all things MLS, all things North American soccer right now, because there's a few big stories, Marcelo, and the guys can weigh in because they both played for... You guys all played for your national teams. So in the States, U.S. men's national team sporting director Matt Crocker leaves 8 weeks before the World Cup for Saudi Arabia. Not sure if this is big news or if it's overblown. Marcelo, you get first chance at this question.
Strange news, isn't it? You're hosting the World Cup. You hire Emma. You hire Pochettino. And you decide to leave U.S. soccer in your post to go to Saudi Arabia for more money? I'm a firm believer of when you commit, you commit. And when you back out, what's he afraid of? What's he afraid of? That the U.S. isn't going to do well in the World Cup and it's going to fall on him? Well, that's part of business, is it not? So I'll say this, very disappointed, because if you go back and read all the stuff and you listen to him throughout the year of how much it's job he wanted. He wanted to help U.S. soccer. He wanted to help soccer in this country. And then he quits right before the biggest event in the world, the biggest tournament in the world for all of us. I would think that's it. It's very disappointing. Just because, again, you're 8 weeks away. It shouldn't affect the team. But do you really need anything distracting this team? Or do you need anything really – being a big hiccup right now and in the year where we're 2 months away from the World Cup. So I have other choice words to say, but for now, I'll just say you don't want to be here. Then, you know, I think we hire somebody who does want to be here and wants to see the future of this franchise or this federation keep growing.
Do you think it'd be better to look, you know, closer to home? Like there's plenty of American 100%. Guys, right? That's like, what are we talking about here?
Listen, we're past that stage where we need to hire outside. I think we have enough talented people that can run U.S. soccer here in the United States that know the culture, that know the system, that can do the same job. I mean, was it a shock to go get Pochettino? I mean, you know what I mean? He was on the list. So, yeah, I would like to see it stick to someone who knows U.S. soccer, someone who's been around U.S. soccer. There's enough people out there who are passionate about our sport that could run this federation.
Do you find that loyalty may be gone a little bit in this game now? You just find so often that people are jumping ship and looking for better opportunities, aren't they?
Money talks, doesn't it, I guess? But here's the deal. After the World Cup's over, you could have easily just walked away. And I don't think anybody would have said anything. Now you question it. You question, why is he leaving? Is he not confident? Is he scared that the U.S. team is not going to do well? It's going to fall on him. So, you know what I mean? It's disappointing because loyalty, when you sign a contract, that's your contract. For us back in the old days, when you sign it, you fulfill that contract. And he did not. He chose to walk away for more money. From what I've read, I don't know for sure, but from what I read, bigger contract, maybe a different project. But again, That would be like Pochettino walking away right now and saying, "Nah, I got a better offer somewhere else before the World Cup started." So I don't agree with the decision. But I guess to each their own. We don't know the situation he's in, but I've yet to see anybody walk away 2 months before a World Cup, biggest World Cup that you're one of the three countries that's hosting it.
Marcelo, the sporting director with the U.S. men's national team, and guys, please forgive me on my ignorance, but is that top dog for decision making? For, because I know that, you know, when someone says sporting director, I know at club it's sometimes different than it is on national team, but where does that stand in the federation in the
US? What was Matt's title?
Sporting director. Yeah,
there you go. So there's people above him, you know, that run the federation. So, you know, when you're talking about the sporting director, it more than likely now will be an ex-player. Maybe it could be Gucci, who's in that kind of similar, that position. They could slide him right up there. But yeah, when you're talking about a sporting director, I would think that having playing experience, having been a guy who's been around, knows what U.S. soccer is about, knows the youth systems like we all have, we've been through it, would probably be a good choice for that job right now. So I think it's going to be an easy fill. So, but easy in terms of Gooch is already there. Gooch has already been working. He's already been in that position, close underneath that position. So I could see that being a real slip into that position. But I would think the big decisions would come from Cindy Parlow, right?
I guess the final, I want to put a bow on this one, but there's a level that all three of you guys, would you rather be? Canada's got a bunch of injuries. The U.S. has some off-field drama. Who's look like in CONCACAF with the Mexicans between those three? Because I know Haiti's in, Curaçao's in. We're in a place where, you know, all of a sudden the Mexicans look drama-free compared to our two nations.
They just cover it better.
Pardon me?
They just cover it better.
Yeah, maybe they do. But who do you guys like? Who's looking best? Who's looking worst? Marcelo, you go first. Who would you rather be right now?
I'll stick to the U.S. You know what I mean? I mean, Canada's going to stick to Canada. The Mexicans are going to stick to the Mexico team. So, listen, we're not overly thrilled right now. You know, I don't think that we should be overly thrilled that we played 38 minutes or 40 minutes of good soccer against Belgium and then we fell apart. Nothing to be proud of after so many years, but you got to have faith in your team. You got to stay positive because this isn't the World Cup. And once you get into World Cup, ties matter, wins matter. Mm-hmm. So were the two results bad for the U.S.? Yeah, they did not look great against Belgium. Portugal, they looked a little better. So at any time, you know what I mean? If Christian wakes up a little bit, and Weston picks it up, then, you know, win here or win there, you're out of the group, and who knows what can happen. So Canada with the injuries, you know, this is part of reality. That's just part of life. That's what is part of our sport. Hopefully they recover because it's important for Canada to do well and Mexico to do well. It would be nice to see all three teams get out of their group. But you know what? You've got we're so close to the World Cup that, like I said, I'm going to stick to the U.S. I think the U.S., has everybody, they're healthy, and hopefully they can turn it on at the right time.
Hockey, before your first coffee, while the rest of the city's still hitting snooze, we're breaking down everything that happened last night.
Center, score!
The biggest moments, the key storyline, and the takes that actually matter.
Back for Kudrow, score!
Wake up and get your hockey fix. Fast, smart, and ready for your day with voices who live the game. Morning Hockey starts here. Weekday mornings on SiriusXM Morning Skate. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Click to SiriusXM.ca/Morning Skate.
Well, you go back to the 94 World Cup at home that you played in. Yeah. You know better than anybody that tournament football is different than league football. And you get into a tournament and you manage that properly. You just never know what could happen.
Yeah. You know, I mean, listen, we the pressure we had in 94 was to, we knew we had to get out of the group. We knew we had a game plan. We knew that if we could do something I guess you would say special for us, because not a lot of people in that group, no one really gave us a chance to get out of it. Mm-hmm. So beating Colombia and getting us out of that group was, it just opened everybody's eyes of what the U.S. had, you know, and what the potential we had. And especially when people don't realize that six of that starting 11 didn't have club teams. If you look at that back line, Tony trained with the national team full time. Caligiuri, Lexi, myself, Fernando, Mike Sorber. So you look at that, Thomas Dooley came back. So when you look at that group and you say five or six of the 11 played with their national team and didn't play professional soccer up into that World Cup, and you beat the number one team in South America, you can do special things. You can do special things when you're hosting and when you have the fans behind you. And we did, Canada will, and so will Mexico.
I go back to this. Sorry, guys. I go back to that, and I'm going to change a little bit, because I think about that World Cup and what it did for young male and female players, you know, over the years, and the legacy that that left.
Yeah.
Do you think that this World Cup coming up, I mean, with the prices of tickets and the access to games, are we going to miss out in North America on that we saw in 1994 with the ticket prices that were affordable?
You know, everything was affordable in 94.
It's true.
You know, it's just modern times. Anywhere you go, inflation, everything has gone up. So, you know, you always worry. You always worry about that kid that, you know, went to the 94 World Cup and saw us play and realized that's what they wanted to do. Right. But I'll say this. I know a lot of people who have maxed out credit cards to go to this World Cup. So, you know what I mean? But that's our sport. That's how much we love our sport. That I got a buddy who bought $15,000 worth of tickets. And I'm like, you've got it. And he's like, yeah, I'm going no matter what. This could be the last time that the World Cup's in this country while I'm alive. So I think we can always look at this and that. Are they a little high? You know, I think if you ask certain people, yeah. If you ask some people, they don't care. They just want to go to the World Cup. So I just hope that those kids are in the stadium. I hope those kids that are 11, that are 10, and see the World Cup and realize this is what they want to do for a living. This is the dream. You know what I mean? So hopefully, we'll still have those kids being able to watch the games this summer.
Let's shift to MLS a little bit. LAFC and Nashville both qualify for the semis in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. One of these new tournaments that, you know, I have to say, 2 or 3 years ago, we weren't really watching. But for Canadians, we had the Whitecaps, who did so well last year.
Yep.
But this means a lot. Tell me about this growth, and obviously LAFC is stacked. Nashville
stacked,
playing great soccer right now. Great football. Stacked. These guys are all, you guys talk about it all the time. Like, what does this mean for those two teams to go up against some giants from Liga MX?
For me, it means nothing until you win it. No, but I'm serious. We always get teams to a final. We get a team to a semifinal. Mm-hmm. You know, how many times have we been in a final and we've lost? You know what I mean? We've won one CONCACAF Champions Cup, and that was Seattle, right? So winning it is going to mean a lot. Getting LAFC and Nashville both have a great opportunity, but keep getting to a semifinal, getting to a final, and not winning it, it's almost like the U.S. saying, we got out of the group this summer and we're happy. That's a load of BS. Let's be honest. We're past that stage. That was 90, 94. If we get out of the group, damn right we get out of the group. That's a win. That's no longer a win for the U.S. national team. You need to get out of the group and you need to win the next game. Bottom line, you need to reach a quarterfinal. So when we talk about CONCACAF Champions Cup, I think we're past that phase two of just getting to the final or reaching the semifinal. I think we're at a point where we need to win it. If we want to say that we're better than Liga MX and we're competing with Liga MX every year, then we need to win something. And I'm not talking about Leagues Cup. I mean, Leagues Cup's a great tournament, and I love it, but this is it. We all play for Champions Cup. Let's be honest. That's the tournament everybody wants to win. So for me, getting there is just not good enough anymore. We need to win it, and we need to win it two or three times in a row instead of just one time in the history.
there's, I mean, massive financial benefits now as well. I mean, the prize money for CONCACAF in this tournament is gone through the roof. And then you make the Club World Cup, and then there's the more money there too. So I love the incentive for that, for sure. And the tournament is building. But where do you, I mean, you must be happy where MLS is now compared to obviously the early days when it was up in the air. Remember Frank Yallop with the Tampa Bay Mutiny, and, you know, he was wondering whether the league was going to survive every year, and, you know, and to where it is now, it's actually amazing. And from that point of view, you must be happy with the growth of the, of what's going on.
I think we're all happy. You know, I mean, we knew, listen, when we came back in 96, I think we all kind of knew. They made it very clear to us. We've got money to sustain this league for about 3 years. Depending on what happens on those 3 years, we'll see where this league goes. So I think you saw back the sacrifice. And I don't think those guys, the first 3 years, get a lot of credit for what they did for, and I'm talking the players, because we were out on streets doing appearances at liquor stores, anywhere we could promote the team. Listen, I was standing on Federal Boulevard across the street from Mile High Stadium at a liquor store, because it's a packed avenue, Federal, at 5 o'clock with little Rapids flags and a table if people wanted to pull over and get autographs and figure out who we were. So
amazing.
Listen, yeah. So I don't think they've got those guys, those first 3 years, those guys got enough credit for where this league is today. Unfortunately, I think all these newer generations think they're the ones that have really put it together. And Mr. Forrest would know the sacrifices we made back in those days. So I think we're all happy where this league is. I think we're all happy where it's growing and where it's going to keep growing. And I think every year it just keeps getting better and better and better. And eventually, you know what I mean, they'll loosen up the purse strings a little bit and allow teams to spend as much money as they want to go buy players. And it's, listen, it's a natural progression of how this league's going to go, because every league in the world has the same thing. You're going to have the Manchester United, the Man Cities, the Arsenals that are going to go spend a boatload of money to get players. And there's other teams at the bottom that are going to stick to their game model, and they're going to find their players, and they're going to be competitive. So I think eventually you're going to see MLS come to that. But the one thing you can say about this league is the state-of-the-art facilities we have, training facilities, some of the best in the world. The stadiums that are under 30,000, from look at Nashville, and they're in the, what they did over there, Cincinnati. You know what I mean? You can just keep going down the list. And then you look at a Seattle who plays at the Seahawks stadium that's putting 45,000 people in their stadium. So I just came back from Vancouver where they had 25,000 in that bottom bowl, and it was electric in that stadium. So like I said, it's growing, and I think we just have to keep making sure that as we keep building on top of the foundation, that we don't leave any cracks.
I wanted to ask Jimmy, from a point of view from, you know, hey, you're attached with TFC. When you're seeing the CONCACAF Champions Cup and two MLS teams in the semis, as Marcelo said, it's about winning. But it's also got to be a bit about growth, right? And challenging and looking at how you're stacking up against Liga MX.
Yeah, to a certain extent. But at the end of the day, when you play professional football, it's all about winning. It's all about results. And every match that you play, you want to win. I mean, look, when you step onto the pitch, you're not thinking in the back of your mind as a player, oh, this is great for growth. I'm thinking, I want to win a damn cup here. I want trophies, because at the end of the day, when I retire, the only thing I've got is that trophy that I've won that I can look back at. Yep. So for me, and this was going to be a question from Marcelo, was, you know, we see often these MLS teams get to the final, but they just can't get over the finish line. What do you think it is about these Mexican sides? Is it their mentality, the just game-winning mentality? They know how to manage games, and they know how to pull off these results, and we're just not there yet?
No, I think we're there. I think that it's always difficult when you look at – anytime you got to go to Mexico, it's difficult. They make it difficult. Each stadium, when I was there, each stadium has something different about it. We played in León, we left the grass a little thicker, so when teams came in, it was heavier on the legs. When you go to Santos, their field was hard as a rock. They watered it. But the day of the game, they wouldn't water it. So when you walk out there, it's just, I mean, after about 30 minutes, your calves are on fire, because it's like walking. It's like literally running on cement. You know, when you go to Azteca, the grass is a little thicker. They wet it down. The smog, the altitude, it's just a big field, 120 by almost like, I think it was 78 wide. So
yeah,
every team takes advantage of the situation. And I think like anything else, sometimes I think it becomes more tactically of how we lose games because we get ourselves opened up. We start trailing, and what do we have to do to get back into the game? We have to open ourselves up. And when the MLS teams open themselves up, the Mexican teams love to pick you apart, little passes, short through, and they get in. And but I think that's changed. If you look over the last few years, it's changed. Now, if you want to separate Toluca right now, two-time champion, they're a phenomenal team right now. Phenomenal team. So that's a difficult team no matter where or who you play, at home or away. They're just a machine right now. Hmm. Other teams you can beat. I mean, we saw Cruz Azul got taken down, you know what I mean? So it's just, again, and remember, Toluca, you're at altitude a little bit too. That affects you too. Playing the first game at home, I'd rather play the second game at home where you have that opportunity. So I think it's little tiny things now that are happening that are not allowing us to get there. But again, we're getting there. We're getting to a final. Now we just got to get past that hump consistently. And I think the more money we're spending, look at what LAFC's done this year. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Let's be honest. The money they spent, Estacio in the midfield, I mean, Son, Bowanga, I can keep going. Mm-hmm. You know, Nashville, it's just they're spending the money to be competitive at the highest level in CONCACAF Champions Cup. So I think that's where you start seeing the gap closing a little bit more.
Do you think as the league, you know, progresses and you say that the big clubs or people with ambition that and the clubs could start to spend money, that would probably make a difference as well as far as challenging for that tournament, when you think?
Yeah, listen, I think when we talk about Miami, does Miami buy players to buy players, or are they trying to strategically buy the right players and spend the money to win a championship? Right? Mm-hmm. What's LAFC doing? LAFC's buying players and they're spending money to win cups and to win. As Jimmy was saying, at the end of the day, you want to look at how many trophies you have on the shelf, you know, and don't get me wrong. The more you win, the better contract you get. We all know that. We all know that. So, let's just be honest. I mean, the bonus money, the new contracts, they're huge. So there's just certain teams in MLS that are willing to spend the money to put themselves in a position where they can win. Look at Vancouver. You go on by Mueller, not just to say we got Mueller. They want to win. And the first opportunity, they were close. Let's be honest. They were one post away from going up 2-1 in Miami and possibly taking that tournament. So, again, I think it comes down to every team has a game model. And with all due respect, everybody's got to stick to their game plan. There's just certain teams that want to spend the money to make soccer a little bit more entertaining in MLS.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about, I mean, when you look at Los Angeles and the Galaxy for years were the poster club and the, you know, the power in MLS. And then with this LAFC situation, mm-hmm. what we saw, well, obviously Chivas USA, that was a complete disaster. I don't, you know, that didn't seem to.
Yeah.
It was a cluster. Yeah. But LA, they have just nailed it on and off the field.
Yeah,
and they seem to be what the model is now with new clubs looking to compete. And maybe San Diego is in that bracket now. I'm not sure, but
yeah, at San Diego, I like what San Diego's done, but it's their first year. You know what I mean? When we talk about LAFC, we're talking about history there. LA Galaxy with history, Miami. We know what Miami's about. So, listen, I think when you look at it, unfortunately, the Galaxy have fallen off. Let's just be honest. They've fallen off. They had it right. And then injuries and then Ricky Pooch going down. That I've never seen one team completely collapse with one player. We're talking about Ricky Pooch, right? I mean, completely collapsed. So we'll see how they do this year without him again, but they've picked up some better players. But I think when you look at and I'm talking game models, when LAFC put their game model together, they haven't veered from it. They have the coach they want, the kind of profile coach they need and they want. They have profiles for every position, like every team does. But the difference is LAFC is willing to spend that money. LAFC is willing to put it out there. Listen, you don't go get Lloris just to get Lloris to say we got a World Cup champion. We got Lloris because we want to win championships. You bring in, you kept Bawanga because, listen, they could have easily have sold Bawanga. Every rumor out there was between $10 and $15 million for Bawanga. Mm-hmm. But they gave him the right contract instead of letting him go. And now he's playing with Son. You go and pick up Son. You're like, okay, well, I mean, you can clearly see the vision they have of what they want to do. They want to be a pretty offensive, sexy team going forward. And they are. And they are. They defend mm-hmm. well. So I think you have to allow every team to do what they need to do to be successful. There's no relegation. So where's the harm of opening up the purse strings a little bit and allowing certain teams or certain, if you want to go spend an extra $100 million and you have it, great, go spend it. Go buy players. It's only going to make this league more entertaining, be it the Canadian teams, be it the MLS, the U.S. teams. I don't look at it that way. We're all part of MLS. We all want to see this league grow. So allow teams to show their personalities and see what they want. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The last question of the day for you, Marcelo, is that Javier Mascherano resigns from Inter Miami after winning last year and his entire coaching staff. That's what I – so what is our insight on this one? What's your take?
I'm disappointed because we have Miami this weekend. So, here in Colorado. So, no, I don't know. I got to be honest with you. When I saw that, I just kind of sat there going, wait a minute. The whole coaching staff, everybody, so you're going to start new coming into right before the World Cup. So I one, a little shocked. Two, I saw an interview today with Beckham the other day, and they were asking about Gary Neville. And he said, I can guarantee you Gary Neville will not be here. So that's a bonus for them. obviously, it's got to be a you know what? In my head, I'm not even gonna lie. In my head, I see a Argentine coach right now who may coach the World Cup team for Argentina after the World Cup. I don't know. I don't want to say anything. May come to the United States. You know what I mean? I got to say, at this point of the season, he was not the guy that I thought would be on the bubble. I knew Oscar was on the bubble because of, he gets there, but he could never get over that hump. I think there was a few coaches. We all knew Greg Vanney was on the bubble mm-hmm. because of the last the year before that. But when you talked about Mascherano, it didn't even cross my mind that they would get rid of him. So it'll be interesting to see what they do this weekend and how they play. But I got to be honest with you, I'm a little lost on that one because now do you hire a quick coach or do you wait till after the World Cup and see who you can pick up? Because we know after the World Cup, there's going to be a lot of coaches looking for jobs. Yeah. So if you're Beckham in that group, I would think you're probably already talking to people. So when the World Cup's done, you bring that coach in. And I expect it to be a big name coach. I don't expect it to be a young guy that they're going to give another chance to. You know what I mean? I think it's going to be somebody that probably Messi's camp has to approve or wants to approve along with Beckham for the style of play they want to play.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how much effect and how much influence does Messi have, and I got to guess that you'd say a lot.
Well, I'm going to lie to you. I don't think Messi has anything. when you're a franchise, you always pull your four or five players, and you always are asking for advice. Kind of like that coaches group you have that you need to have discussions with. And I think Messi and DePaul and Suarez will have input as well as they should with David Beckham to see what best fits this team, and they can come to a mutual agreement. You know what I mean? I would think that's the way that they're probably going to handle it.
Marcelo, thanks so much for spending this time with us. It's always a pleasure to have you jump on. We're going to call you again to get you on as the season goes. But where can we find you? Are you calling the games this week?
You're going to find me in my office in Denver right now. That's it. No. I'm still looking at two possibilities to do games for the World Cup. So yeah. I'll wait. I'll wait and see with that. But I'll be at the first U.S. game. And, I'm going to try to get to as many games as I can. So that's for sure this weekend. I got Colorado, Miami for Apple TV. So that should be a very interesting matchup to see how and what happens this week. But yeah, you can catch almost every weekend. And God, I'm in Colorado this weekend. Wednesday, I'm in LA. And then Saturday, I'm in Minnesota.
And this is where you'll find Marcelo also at the local liquor store on Federal.
Yeah, I gave that up. Now I stand outside of what's it called? In-N-Out Burger, because there's more people there.
Thanks so much, brother. It's such a pleasure to have you on again, man.
Yeah, you great too. To see you, Marcelo.
See you, buddy.
Super fun. Jimmy, I know you have to jump. Do you got time still? Can you hear me, Craig?
Yep, I can hear you.
I can hear you.
Oh. Yeah. No, I don't. Do you have to jump, Jimmy?
That's interesting how we lost audio. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's gone.
All right. Well, it's perfect because this sets us up for something special between you and I, my friend. Going to find it right here. Boop, boop, boop.
I was looking at Marcelo and when we first played each other with the U.S., Canada. Oh, yeah. Goes back to 1992 in Greensboro, Carolina.
So what was that match?
It was a friendly. Yeah.
Did you guys do many friendlies with the U.S. and Mexico back in the day?
No.
I wouldn't think so.
No, not friendlies, no.
Was Canada soccer ambitious about its friendlies back then?
I would say.
Or could you get a game? Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, like the other teams would have had to say, hey, the other nations would have had to say, hey, we want to play Canada.
Yeah, that was always a problem. I mean, the best run of games we had was prior to the World Cup in 1994 because everybody was situated in North America, even in Toronto. The Germans were at the Nottawasaga Inn in Ontario.
Right.
You know, they had a pitch there that even today is like one of the best pitches in Ontario.
Really?
That's so crazy.
Along the 400 when we drive up and down going on our little cottage trips.
That's right. Yeah, that's where the German national team is based. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to click a button.
Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
DJ Melody.
It's 40 picks.
So that's Footy Picks brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Craig Forrest, what do you got for me?
Well, it's not a spectacular pick, I would say, but maybe interesting from a point of view for down at the bottom of the table. Oh. Wolves away to Leeds United. Wolves have struggled to score in half of their Premier League games. Leeds coming off a good result recently against United. I think it's a strong home win, I think, against Wolves. I think they're pretty much lambs to the slaughter at this point, Wolves, and just playing for next season and positions. But I think Leeds coming off that result and the confidence and playing at home will be the difference to take them over Leeds. And that pays about, 162 or something like that for the home win.
It's interesting to me. Leeds has been flirting with being a team, not in relegation, but close to it. And they keep seeming to be like increasing their standard, like playing successful football where you're like, all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, you guys are good sometimes.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they're a massive club. They really are well supported. They've always been sort of that giant club that they even call a sleeping giant when they're in lower divisions. But there was a time, remember David O'Leary was the manager when they brought Rio Ferdinand in. There was Cantona. They were challenging and playing in Champions League. Now they invested so heavily to play in the Champions League that when they didn't make it financially, they put themselves in a real hole, and that affected them for years and years until they pulled themselves out of it. So, you know, holding their ground in the Premier League is where they got to do right now, and their ambitions later on for challenging for Champions League is puts them in a better stead. But they've got to be very careful financially, obviously. But they seem to be doing the right things over the last 4 or 5 years.
I like this Leeds bet. That's actually, now that you're saying it, makes a lot of sense to me. There was another thing I wanted to talk to you about before we jump is UCL, the UEFA Champions League. Played this week. I guess what's interesting to me is I remember a few weeks ago, I said, look how good the Prem teams, and you even said it. There were like, the Prem teams were crushing all of the kind of, what is it? The, what table? The Swiss model at the time, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
The fucking
yeah.
Swiss model. Now, yeah. There's one team left and the other teams got bossed out. Like it wasn't, you know what I mean? These are,
yep.
What are we supposed to make of this UCL? Or are these the teams that are still in? Mm-hmm. So deserving. So it's PSG, Bayern, Atletico Madrid, and Arsenal. So one Prem team, right? Yeah. Like,
and all the powerhouses from the other division, other leagues, right?
Yeah.
You know, the same customers, really. I mean, it was a classic Real Madrid against Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich, obviously, powerhouse in Germany. I think the, you're not making excuses for the Premier League teams, but it's so competitive in the Premier League that you don't have easy games. Mm. And in some of the other divisions, you do. And, you know, look at PSG. They murder that league. So they don't have to worry. They can rest players. They could, you know, look, you know, they got leads. They,
well, you can say the same thing with Bayern, too, in the Bundesliga, right?
There's like, you can say the same. Right.
Four really strong teams, maybe five sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting. The other thing is you're, you know, you don't know who's going to come up on top because of that, too, right? Like, mm-hmm. And so my question about Arsenal, you know, what was the term Jimmy used? Like cheeky bum or stinky bum or something? Yeah.
Squeaky
bum time about Arsenal, right?
Oof.
Like, they've given themselves a good opportunity to win the league and UCL, the Champions League.
Yeah, but, the FA Cup, Cup champ final out, like,
yeah.
I
just think of Arteta and how good he's looking on the sidelines, but like his eyebrows are shaped perfectly. He always has the right amount of fuzz on his face.
Oh yeah, he's well put together.
Well put together, but if they flop in either of these things. Arsenal fans, like, they need to win one of these things, correct?
Oh, do they ever? Especially with leading in the league for so long and really dominating. Now Man mm-hmm. City's just on an absolute tear. And they've got to play each other still before the end of the season. And, that, and you know, it was a tricky one against Porto or Sporting, too, because,
Sporting, yes, Sporting.
You know, they nicked a goal away from home and they held tight and, you know, didn't play. They're not playing particularly well, but they grind out results, which is something that they never used to do. So we got to give them credit for that. But there's some nervousness around. You can see that the stadium and the fans are, you know, like they're excited, but they're now getting a little bit nervous and they really don't want this to go sideways.
You know, it's too much history almost, right? Of bottling it, as the term is. I don't, where does that bottling it come from?
Good question.
I gotta look that up. Anyone out there?
I remember being 16 and people say, you know, you bottled it. What I was like, what do they mean?
You're like, did I do well or not?
Yeah, exactly. You bottled it. I was like, oh, thanks.
Yes. That's another bottle of X for me. That's perfect.
Yeah, no, you suck.
Look, pal, always a pleasure to hang out. We're going to say goodbye now. If there's anything else, you guys, please give us a follow on our socials. Reminder. Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. I actually like saying that. And there's lots going on with Footy Prime. We'll be, if you have SiriusXM, the app, and SiriusXM Satellite, Craig, Amy, and Sharms and Jimmy will be getting calls from our friends down on SiriusXM FC to do some analysis for them, a little bit of insight from your above the border Footy Prime peeps. So be on the lookout for lots of different things. Craig's FIFA World Cup schedule is coming into it's solidifying. So if he can get over the border, he may have a job, just so everybody knows.
Hey, speaking of that, I went to the embassy the other day.
Yes, tell me.
And, you know, I have a meeting there, you know, 10:30 for a little interview and, you know, after filling out all these
forms. Okay, wait. Set me up. What is the interview for? Give me full context.
Right. So anyway, you have to apply for a visa. I mean, I've worked in the States before, but it was for Canadian companies. So you don't need a visa. Mm-hmm. And the customs guys pretty much all know that. Once in a while, you'd find somebody would be like, well, do you have proof of, you know, employment and what you're doing and all that? But he didn't need a visa. So doing a couple games in the States and need a visa. So you apply, you go through this huge process online and they know just about everything about you. How many hairs on your ball bag? Like it's like, they know, yeah, everything. Right.
Did and so they know you have, you have only one testicle? Are they going to be going, where's...
They knew that already. So anyway, you got to go for an interview. It's pretty simple. But anyway, so at 10:30 in the morning, I'm walking up the street and I notice there's like hundreds of people. And I'm like, is this a protest by the embassy? Like, I can't figure out what's going on.
Right.
But, well, it's the same address. I get up there and everybody's there doing the same thing for various things like travel, work permits, whatever the, you know, this, their business is in the States. And I don't know. It was absolutely incredible how many people were there. Right. So then I'm standing in line. I half an hour in, I get to this sort of close to the front and this guy's saying, oh yeah, no electronics, no electronics. And I was like, does that include phones? And he's like, yeah, no phones. I'm like, okay, can I leave it inside? No, you can't. So I have to walk up the street to a lock place, like a storage unit place.
Yeah.
That are very familiar with the situation because they're ready for you. Yep, $15. Leave your bag and your phone here and come back again.
Oh, they are smart. Do you think they're working with the U.S. Embassy?
Yeah, they're probably taking a cut.
Yeah.
Good business. They had bags everywhere. So anyway, you go in and you do your pre-interview and they make sure you got all your paperwork and whatnot. Then they do fingerprints. They got every print you could possibly think of, your thumbs and your index fingers and put your four fingers on, the whole deal. And then they you get to another section. They're just like, yep, everything's good. Do you just have your letter of proof of employment? I was like, well, I do, but it's on my phone. So I had it ready on my phone, but I don't have my phone.
Right.
So anyway, I had to email that to them and hopefully they got it.
They put it with the right dossier, like the right file.
Yeah. And I left my passport there too. So I hope it all works out.
It might. If they get it confused with Greg Forrest, then you're screwed. Yeah. You're screwed over, right? Yeah. You're going to be at the border trying to get across as Greg and it's not going to work.
No. Everything's got to be perfect. So anyway, that was my little.
I like that. That's a good story. I know we were working on it at my house, jumping on the computer just to go through it a little bit. What, you've never had to do this before, right? This is all new. And who were the people lined up? Like, how long did it take in line?
Well, luckily they let me jump back and at the front-ish of the line instead of having to go to the back of it.
Oh, you thought you were special.
It was down the street. It was literally down the street.
That's what I mean. Yeah. You thought you were special calling FIFA games, but there were 400 other people calling FIFA games.
Yeah, or doing whatever. Everything's important to them. But yeah. And then once you got inside, you go through a metal detector, you do all that. And then you're standing there and you're like, oh, wow, there's actually 100 people in here too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they keep that going to about 1 o'clock. And by the time they run through that back big lineup outside, they're pretty much done at 5 o'clock. But it was interesting how much action there was around the embassy.
Wow. Just a couple shout outs. Once again, if you haven't had a chance, Mark Schwartzer, it was great yesterday. Jump on that pod or on the YouTube. Broadcast, if you haven't listened to that, it came out yesterday. So, look, we're doing tons of work. We're enjoying ourselves. Footy Prime is growing, and we want to thank everybody for supporting us. Once again, Footy Prime, brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Thanks, Craig Forrest and Jimmy Brennan.
Hello, that's great.
Thanks, pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks, Pronger.
Yeah, thanks, Pronger. It was great having Balboa on, too. Marcelo, yeah. he's a class act, played against him a few times. And there's one thing about, I would say about that 94 team, they might not have been attached to professional clubs, a lot of them, but they had character. They had toughness about them. They had an edge about them. And their team right now, I think, is lacking that. But it's hopefully for them that they'll be able to bring it when it matters most.
I was just thinking about what is, like, their biggest worry. Is it off the field? It seems like Pochettino doesn't, like, these guys don't look like they want to play for him. I didn't say that. We should have talked about it. Doesn't look like they want to play for him.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's nothing. I did nothing to do with that. I was like, I'm going to dog it because I don't want to play for this manager, because that's not going to do
you any good personally. No, but right? There's, like, the enthusiasm isn't, like, I would expect, like, we see it with the Canadian national team. Whenever those guys are around each other.
Yeah.
It feels like there's, even if they're injured, I mean, you know, all of that kind of stuff. There was a spring in the step, people happy to be around each other. I don't know if I get that vibe from U.S. men's national team.
No, I agree. There's something seems to be missing there. And obviously the poor results don't help. And when Canada's had a pretty good run over the last few years to build that, you know, so you build that brotherhood, if you like, and then obviously you're building on results and things like that. And the manager plays a big part of that. But certainly the connection between Canada and our manager, Jesse Marsh, is definitely closer. And there's more belief in him and what they're doing than what's happening in the States. There's no question about that.
I have to say, Marcelo was right. You're going to cheer for your national team, but do you want them to do well as a CONCACAF team, or like, how do you want the CONCACAF? Are you just like, the only reason is not to put too much hockey in this. I was driving home this morning and it was all about the Leafs. Final game was last night. They lose to the Sens make the playoffs. Montreal's in the playoffs. Are you going to cheer just because they're Canadian? And I guess the question is, are you going to cheer for the U.S., Haiti, Mexico, and Curaçao just because they're in CONCACAF? Even if you've hated them all your life, like Dubs hates the U.S. women's national team because that's who she played against. Is there that, you know, would you never cheer for the U.S.?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, you know, from a sporting standpoint, the U.S. and them doing well, and the MLS doing well as an effect on Canada, especially with our three teams. At least at the moment, we have three.
Yeah.
So we can benefit from that. We have benefited from the U.S. system. Our women have benefited from the U.S. system, the NCAA system.
Right.
We've been competitive with in international football because of the Americans. That you could argue because of that. You know. So I'm not going to cheer against them for sure. You know, definitely not. There's a lot of people I know and good people in U.S. soccer, and, you know, forget about the politics and all that going on. From a sporting footballing standpoint, I would like to see them do fairly well.
And Mexico?
Yeah, I love Mexico. I love the Mexican team. Always have, and enjoy getting battered by them back in the day with the great teams that they had. You know. Well, there is talking with Mark Schwarzer by getting Maradona buying drinks for everybody after they beat them. Yeah. We had the same thing in Mexico.
Right.
We would go out with Campos and those boys and, you know, it had an amazing time after they smashed us, and they would buy us drinks and everything. I got a soft spot for the Mexicans.
Well, now we know that you're a Federation guy. Go CONCACAF. And, make sure that if you're listening, you gotta represent and pass on that spirit to the other countries, right? Because I think it's a big deal. I'm a big believer in what's good for CONCACAF is actually good for North American soccer across the board.
Correct.
Yeah.
Me too.
This is our third time saying goodbye. Not gonna at MGM make it legendary.
We need to get a life.
We do. I'll meet you for breakfast.
Yeah, right.
Thanks for listening. Keep buying newspapers, everybody.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at @footyprimeig and on Twitter @footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.